Presented by the Esports Research Network and the Media Management and Transformation Center in Jönköping, Sweden.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Esports Research Report. I'm Steph Forum from Emmanuel College in Boston in the United States.
And I'm Brian McCauley here at the Media Management and Transformation Center at the Jönköping International Business School in the city of DreamHack. And today we have Mark McCready with us, who is a representative of Scottish esports and is part of the bigger British esports. And he's here to tell us about something that maybe has not crossed anybody's mind before, which is Scottish esports. So welcome, Mark, and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for asking me to come on. Basically, part of my role is working as the representative for Scotland within the British Esports Association. So a lot of my work is based around working with the schools and colleges within those sectors. And I also do provide some support to the universities as well. Really, where it all started for me was about 2 years ago when I was at university. I'd created a small events platform running, of all games, Fortnite, and then developed into a voluntary role within Esports Scotland, which is an events company, and helped run a couple of their events at Resonate, their Scottish Esports League, and then eventually went on to develop the or create the Esports Society at Queen Margaret University, which is now one of the universities in Scotland, or one of the many universities in Scotland that are now competing in national competitions across the UK. So I guess sort of going about further into it, a lot of my work is now with British Esports, working with the colleges, really working around the education sector. I'm normally based within education and developing a lot of opportunities in Scotland. So I dip into a lot of different areas. But at British Esports, we have developed a qualification around esports, which is something that we're extremely proud of moving forward for colleges now internationally to adopt. And we've now seen, I believe it's now 100 centres have been approved by Pearson in partnership to run this qualification. So it's an exciting job. You get to meet a lot of new people. Every day is a bit different. But yeah, it's very national based within Scotland is primarily my role.
I mean, we'll come back to the qualification. But I mean, the first question we have is what is esports to you? I mean, how do you define it? How would you describe it to grandma?
Oh, to grandma, it'd be a difficult one. First, we've got to explain what a computer is and what the internet is. But to me, esports is human to human competition within a virtual environment. So essentially, taking a video game, whether it is Fortnite, whether it is something like FIFA or League of Legends, and you have any sort of competition base where two teams have been formed or practicing and are now in a competition where there's an ultimate winner at the end. And the whole purpose is to determine the skill. Well, they're usually about the same skill level, but it's to determine who's the better team. And there's some sort of prize or title at the end of it.
Cool. So you mentioned you do a lot of work with universities in the in England, right?
Sorry, Steph. So it's Britain, then there's Scotland, then there's Wales, then there's Northern Ireland, but we don't talk about that now.
I know, I'm trying to be really delicate here because I'm like, touchy, I don't know.
Just mention Brexit. Sorry, I mentioned it.
But I was going to ask sort of what is the esports collegiate scene like there? Because I'm really tapped into the American collegiate scene, which is pretty wild these days. So I'm just, in general, what's it like? What's the scope of it? Just tell us a little bit about kind of the current status of it all.
Yeah, I think ours comes a bit of a difference compared to America, because we've sort of got the college sector, which is different from the universities now. So even just a bit of background on the university side of it, Scotland has what would be on paper changes, but it's around 18 universities in Scotland. About 15 of them have an esports society or a gaming society that competes in national competitions. And when I'm mentioning national, it's more UK based. So they're competing against Welsh, Northern Irish, English colleges or universities, sorry. I'm even slipping into this now.
So colleges, hold on, just because I get confused by this, because you know the way England does public and private schools, gets that all mixed up. I mean, so college is a sort of high school?
So college is, so college is where you have a lot more practical qualifications. They do teach some sort of further academic. So you can go to college to do maths, for example. If they do offer some sort of high school qualifications as well, to help skill individuals looking to go down a career path. But if you're looking to become something like a nurse or a physiotherapist, if you're going into research or anything, then you would usually go to university, where you would study to basically attain your degree. At the end of it, you leave with what we would call in Scotland, like a higher national diploma or higher national certificate usually. But within the university setting, it's you're working towards your degree with usually about a 4-year period, whereas colleges is usually a year or two in comparison.
So Steph, I just want you to try and guess what Mark just finished his degree in. Like, this is, just guess. She'll never get it.
She never will. Nobody will.
Marine biology.
Do you know something?
It's not, no, it's not it. Guess. What
it's
is
not
it?
The worst I've heard. I'll go with that.
What is it? What'd you study?
I would ask Brian because I'm curious if he remembers, but
he could explain COVID to me. It was microbiology.
Human biology.
Okay, I was going to guess just like a biology, but I was going to guess biology.
Yeah,
nice. So again, Steph, again, someone smarter than me. We still haven't got anyone less, you know, I can be smarter than.
I thought I'd rather that. No, I've that's me entering my final few weeks of university now. So the honours project's been handed in. It's done with. And
wow.
Looking to graduate in the next couple of weeks. So
Justice, our university association here in Jönköping, there's a very high percentage of the members are from the engineering school. So in the Scotland, is there a certain leaning of tech-orientated people who are part of the esports scene at universities and colleges in Scotland?
So this is something that I've challenged quite a lot, especially when I started entering into the scene and starting to discuss with British esports. You usually jump to the stereotypes of people interested in esports or doing computing courses or they're some part of technology or science. But realistically, I'm a human biology student, which has very little relation. It does with sort of the recovery and treatments process and psychology side. But in terms of the university I went to is mostly known for its health school rather than a business. We do have a business school. We do have like a creative industry aspect to it, but it's more so known for like pharmacology, physiotherapy, nursing. But what we have is about 40 students that are now members of the esports society. And we are actually a smaller university. So that's actually a good number to have involved for a university of 8,000 students. So a lot of those, when there's no computing science course there, and we're managing to get 40 students from all different backgrounds. There's psychology students, there's sociology students getting involved. There's a couple of physiotherapists and those that are going on to even their business management courses. There's a wide range of everybody. But I think it does fit within that stereotype that's been developed over the years. But people use video games now from all different backgrounds and to get involved with esports as well. So it's really just that escape tool of people enjoy it for replacing sports in some cases when they move to universities.
Well, it's just, it's fun. Like, it's entertainment like anything else you do, right? Like watching movies or reading a book. So it's always been interesting to me, those stereotypes of, like, you know, who gamers are, right? And it's like, it can be anybody, right? Why are there these, like, qualifiers or personality traits for liking one form of entertainment over another? I always felt like gaming was kind of weird in that regard. So I think it's really cool. You have such a diverse sampling of kinds of students in the gaming society. That's really neat.
Yeah, it's really awesome to see. And I think especially with the work we've been doing at British Esports of sort of identifying career pathways and opportunities for young people. And it's not, I guess the majority of it is focused at young people because that's where the interest is particularly lying. But it's also for people of all ages to get involved if it is something they're interested in. Especially with where the BTEC sits within colleges, it is a course that anybody can enroll onto, and it does provide them with a career opportunity to go to university and to do what they want. And I think traditionally when you think of video games or saying that esports is playing video games, everybody believes the only career option is to go be a coach or to play the game itself. But realistically, when you break it down, you have the events, you have the communication PR, and that's what that qualification does, is when you look within the modules within, it breaks down your events management, it breaks down your communication, it breaks down even into your physical health and well-being around sort of when you should be taking breaks. It breaks down all these different areas, even into entrepreneurs, to get more people involved with the industry and to create their own companies. But these are sort of modules that they can highlight to say, this is actually what I'm interested in. And if they are interested in the sort of psychology side of it, or physical activity side of keeping people active, then they could go to university and they can apply to a physical activity, health and wellbeing course. And it's still relevant to esports. It's just using esports as a facilitator to educate young people.
So is this kind of... is this within a degree you're doing that you can choose to take this qualification? That you're doing a degree and you take this qualification as part of your degree, or is this a sort of separate thing?
No, so this is sort of moving to colleges. So what we'd look at is colleges would be your higher education, then university would be your further education. So within colleges, what we're looking at is providing sort of low-skilled opportunities. So people that are low-skilled would come to come to college to gain further skills so they can progress into specific sort of industries for jobs, or they can progress further into further education where they can become more specialized down that career pathway. What the BTEC looks to cover is for those that are looking to develop initial skills and to develop into, I've left school, I don't really want to go to university yet, or maybe you've not achieved the grades to get into university, but you're looking to develop your skills in a specific area. And maybe going into a full-on events management course isn't necessarily for you. You're maybe a bit stuck between. You can enroll onto an esports course as a full-time student and try a couple of different modules using esports to facilitate that interest. So when you do leave after your year or two, you can actually apply to university and be accredited to enroll onto events management at one of the universities in the UK. So it's to help facilitate people and provide skill opportunities.
All right. So as the American, I have to ask, tell us about the British esports scene. What's going on there? What's it like?
Yeah, so a sort of a background of what the British Esports Association actually is. It was set up in 2016 by Chester King, who's still our chief executive. He had a large, extensive background in the sports industry, and also being part of the IOC, or the International Olympic Committee. So back in 2016, he actually ran something called the E-Games event alongside the Olympics in Rio. And it had a lot of good success coming out of it. And it really did stimulate the idea around running for establishing a national body. So I believe it actually stemmed from his son's interest in esports, and it really caught his eye to start looking into this space. But back in 2016, we proposed to the British government to use British and establish ourselves as the national body that was approved, and we've now been put together as the national body of esports. So not governing body, which is slightly different, but as a national body to sort of represent and help inspire and promote esports within the UK. So through that, we've started to work with schools and colleges, establishing what we have is the British Esports Championships, which is a schools and college competition for everyone across the UK to get involved with, which runs League of Legends, Rocket League and Overwatch. Those are our three main titles, and that's now reaching out.
Do you play university against university, or do schools play universities? And is it like gymnastics where the 14-year-olds have more flexibility and have an advantage? You know, or the college is going, oh my God, yep, we got beaten by some 14-year-olds. Is that what happens? Could you do that?
So within the championships, it's schools and colleges. The university scenes run within the Newland NSE. But within the schools and colleges, yeah, that it happens. It's anybody that's enlisted as a full-time student within colleges can register, and all students under 18 are full-time. So basically it's from 13 years older. So you get 13-year-olds that compete in it as well. So Brian's nightmare.
but there was a term, Rory Sutherland, famous advertising guy, he said placebo education. I went to Cambridge, therefore I am educated and smart. And I wonder if, you know, if you had 14-year-olds, you know, crapping on a university grad, you know, by people to finish your degree, they lose confidence in that placebo education effectively lost.
Because you lost the 14-year-old in Overwatch, your whole education's trash, is that? I don't know if it works that way.
I think even we, so this year for the championships, we have a school called Alva Academy that got involved, and they put forward a Rocket League team. And I believe they're now sitting top of their division within Rocket League. And that's a high school competing against colleges and high schools across the UK. And I believe they're made up, I believe there's like a 16-year-old in there and a 15-year-old. I don't know their exact ages, but it's within that age range that are competing. So you do have a lot of young people that are competing against those that are nearer the 20 mark or over the 20 mark. So it's really just providing that safe space for young people to play video games, but also to develop as they go to college, which is one of the benefits. If they do leave school, then they can go to college and they can still get involved with this, and they can meet other people that would still be interested. And I think the connection with the universities as well, we do work quite closely with the NEU, who run I believe they're originally called the National University Esports League. They've been running for, I believe, about 8 years now. And they've been working with universities up and down the UK. I believe they work now with the majority of them. I think there's very few universities in the UK as a whole that doesn't have an esports society or a gaming society. So it's very well established within the education setting, and within sort of the professional side of it or the amateur scene, there's a lot of infrastructure being built up right now around progressive pathways within. We're starting to see a lot more development around the amateur leagues to develop into your sort of European leagues as well. There was the announcement of the UKLC, the UKEL. There's a lot of now divisions being made even within League of Legends to help progress through, which is already set up in the universities, the schools and colleges, where they have that progression as they go through the education pathway. But for those that are looking to go professional, they can join one of these amateur teams and they can climb that ladder essentially and be put on a pedestal where they can compete against some of the better teams. But you do have some national leagues like the UK Rainbow Six that got, or the UK R6, which got established, I believe, last year. So there's a lot of big players that are now or big publishers in game titles that are now getting more involved with the amateur side to help develop that, which I think is something that we're doing pretty well in terms of the sort of infrastructure that was there to begin with. So it's really just developing on top of it and allowing the publishers to really create opportunities through their title.
I love the fact that, you know, you said 2016 it was founded, and I'm just going, oh my God, that's like only 5 years ago. Yeah. You know, it's so new. We're so embedded in it, and like myself, Steph, we're doing this podcast, and we're doing research, and, you know, we're teaching it and working with different stakeholders, and you're like, oh, this has been forever. Like, I was talking to DreamHack today about this, and, you know, and then you go, 2016, and you probably, if you look at the video, I go, wow, it's so recent, you know. I was in Vietnam still then. And the sort of thing is, like, British esports started in 2016. When did the Scottish side of it start, and your role? I mean, are you the main Scottish person in charge of Scottish esports?
Yeah. So, actually, it's scary thinking about that. When 2016 started, I went to university. So that's, when you think of it as being young as that, I'm literally just leaving university now. I joined British Esports in 2020, in January. So I actually just came back from the UK on a holiday, and was right into the swing of things of developing everything, of sort of like the British Esports section for Scotland, and helping provide opportunities. So really, I've been in this role for just over a year now. But in terms of, from a national body perspective of what you would sort of expect of working and making these connections, it is solely been myself developing the scene up here in Scotland within British esports. There's a lot of great people up here that are doing amazing things and developing. I know the university scene's now getting a lot of support put behind it, and they're all coming together to help provide these competitions and events, and the likes of Kenji, who's with the College Development Network, who I work with quite regularly. There's a lot of great people, including Brian Houston with the Scottish Esports Hub as well. So there's a lot of great connections across that are doing fantastic things.
Yeah, and I've met Brian, and, you know, I've talked to Brian, and he's a very passionate, great guy. And it's nice to see that it's not just you, and there's other very enthusiastic people. So for Steph now, the American, of course. So Steph, there's cities in Scotland, right? And
oh, are there?
And
what a novel concept.
There's one or two rival football teams play, and there's another one that does a comedy festival, which is Edinburgh. So Glasgow and Edinburgh, right? And that's, you know, like Ireland's Dublin and maybe Cork, you know, and it's kind of, you know, okay. Stockholm and Gothenburg and Malmo and Sweden, you know, smaller country syndrome. And one of the other cities is Dundee. And Dundee is how many people live in Dundee, Mark? 50,000 or more? Or bigger?
Yeah, under 100,000 people.
That's so big.
80,000? I may lie, it may actually be about over 100,000, but if I had to make a calculated guess, yeah, just under 100,000 probably.
So tell Steph, which might even make the Boston girl jealous here, because I'm in Sweden and I'm totally jealous of you. So what's happening in Dundee right now is very exciting.
So recently there was an announcement, or I say recently, it was last year, September, October, that there's an esports arena being developed in Dundee, in partnership with Dundee Council and Aberdeen University. So they're basically wanting to develop this arena, and off the back of Aberdeen's announced esports qualifications that they're going to run. When in line with the arena itself. So there's, I think, essentially sort of jumping off of what Brian was saying around, yeah, there's this small city within Scotland that's now getting an arena built in it. Why is it getting an arena? It's a bit of a strange occasion.
Yeah, I see.
Dundee's actually really well situated between Glasgow, Edinburgh and Aberdeen, which are sort of the major cities within Scotland. It's about an hour or 10 hour and a half drive from all the cities, so it's really easy access to get to it, where I believe Glasgow to Aberdeen is about a 3 to 4 hour drive. So it cuts down travel time. Also, Dundee is the home of Lemmings, and a lot of the educational resources around Minecraft.
Nice, yeah.
And it's where the original company behind Grand Theft Auto was based. So they've got a very rich history within game development itself. It's one of the game developing hubs within Europe, and especially partnering with the likes of Abertay, which is, I can't remember what I said during the conference, but they're now the seventh year running number one destination to study game development in Europe.
Wow.
When you really start to add up all the little elements around, it builds such a fantastic story, and it really becomes more of a no-brainer to why those that are leading the game development section within Europe are now looking into esports to develop that sector, which is that small niche within the entire games industry as a whole. So it's a fantastic opportunity. I think, in my opinion, if anybody was going to do it as a university in Scotland or the UK, it would be Abertay to look to.
That's cool.
No, so I like the arguments, because Jönköping's the same. It's between the three major cities, and we have DreamHack, and is that those arguments? So I'm going to be totally hitting you up for some of the top secret details to push stuff to happen here, because I think it's absolutely right. And I know cities in Ireland like Limerick are looking at stuff like that. I've talked to them about this because, you know, sometimes it's not necessarily the biggest city that has to have something. And as a niche and as an identity, smaller cities like Jönköping or Skövde down the road, which has a university of game design, you know, that there's a positioning to be had. I mean, what about Boston, Steph? Has Boston got a sort of reputation growing? You've got the rising guys behind you there.
Oh yeah, the uprising. Yeah. No, it is. It's I mean, Boston and like New England as a whole just has so many colleges and universities here. We're like the most dense area of universities in the whole country. And a lot of the collegiate esports programs, like the earliest ones, have come out of this region or have been inspired by people, collaborated on with people from this region. So there's definitely a growing scene, and I think that's pushing a lot of the professional esports stuff to also sort of look at this area. So yeah, I have this Overwatch poster in the background. We were supposed to this past year have our first, like each team would actually start to have home matches, which was gonna be really exciting. And then COVID kind of canceled that. So all that was sort of put on hold, like many things. So there was like a little bit of a stalling out there, but we've got a few East Coast cities that are putting in esports arenas and the like now. Again, happening more at the professional level than collegiate at this point. I mean, I think colleges are still figuring out how much of buy-in they're going to put into esports, right? Or a lot of them are like, we see this as awesome for like having a team and recruiting, and we like the idea of it. But when you're like cough up some money for an arena, they're like, right? Yeah. So we're not quite there yet, but the professional scene is definitely looking at the Northeast generally.
That's actually something we've been quite critical, especially. I think an esports arena in Dundee sounds fantastic, but realistically, there has to be justification behind it. It's not enough just to say, well, it has all these great things, we'll build an esports arena. Like, the fantasy works, but the fantasy story works with it all, but it's really looking at Dundee and saying, is it a sort of hub? Can it be your Katowice? Can it bring in that sort of audience to Dundee? And can it develop that? I believe it's £1 billion that's been invested into it to develop the arena and a lot of other things to help bring it into as a sort of digital city. So it is really, can they get some sort of competition agreed with one of the major tournament organisers or even the publishers to host a major event? Because that's really what would solidify it as an esports arena. Yes. I think you're hearing a lot about esports arenas, even in the UK. I think there's been like 4 announcements of them being built up and down. But it has to stand for something. It can't just be there itself. It has to be linked in with some sort of major event to bring people towards it and give it that credibility as well.
Mm. So Mark, Steph, go.
Oh no, mine was kind of a tangent, so go ahead.
Well, mine's a tangent too. I mean, like, what I'm thinking is, you know, you're talking about esports arenas, and my little esports arena developed because of this pandemic that apparently has been going on outside. How, you know, the whole COVID situation is where I started playing CSGO, where I decided to start a podcast where I bought too many toys. You know, so to decorate my office, not because I'm a giant child. And so, like, my question is, like, from the perspective of British esports and Scottish esports, I mean, has that been, you know, has COVID, I shouldn't say this, but has it been a positive for esports and in this, like, you know?
I think, especially when I sort of onboarded onto the team at British esports, we weren't doing much within Scotland. There was a lot that can be done within Scotland, and especially coming in, I wanted to get to see the colleges, meet the students on campus, speak to some of the coordinators that might be looking into facilitating some clubs or getting involved with the champs. But with COVID hitting, it kind of wiped all that out straight away. And within the UK, because we went into a very strict lockdown immediately, and we were very strict in opening things up, there was no real opportunities for anything to really happen. So everything had to go digital. But from at that time, I was still the president of the Esports Society at my university. And that was something that we kept running over the summer period, where a lot of societies would shut down for the year, wait till they come back for the next academic year. We could stay online because we're all in playing video games. And it was just an opportunity to stay connected and keep our minds active and keep in touch with our friends and those that were in our courses. So it provided a good opportunity because it's already digital. And especially coming back to university, when a lot of these societies started up again, you had football teams that couldn't play football. So what did they do?
Played Madden.
Sometimes. Oh God, no!
I should say
she's playing with me now. She's
what?
She's
playing with me.
The real football.
She's preempting me. Do you know what a deep fried Mars bar is, Steph? Have you ever heard of a deep fried Mars bar?
All right, listen.
Yeah.
Listen.
Oh, she wasn't. She actually wasn't in Madden. Oh my God. Americans, do you know what a deep fried Mars bar is, Steph? Have you ever heard of that? A deep fried Mars bar?
I can assume what it is. Is this
the
candy bar? Like you just deep fry the candy bar?
In batter, special batter, and that is from Scotland.
Oh, sounds disgusting.
No, it's amazing. Scotland is the greatest culinary nation on earth because that's the greatest single invention ever. The deep fried Mars bar. So they win. Sorry, Italy. Scotland made that. But, you know, you learn some stuff.
It's not so much that you would go and buy a Mars bar from. So where I lived, actually, I'm on the east coast of Scotland, but I was on the west growing up. There was chip shops that were right next to sort of like grocery shops, and you'd go in and you'd buy a Mars bar as like within like the sweet section of the grocery shop, and you'd go around the corner to the chip shop and ask them to batter it for you and deep fry it.
And they would do it. That's amazing. Yeah.
But the proper batter has Coke in it, not milk, because I did consider putting on my restaurant I used to have in Vietnam, but I never got around to it. I mean, okay, so deep-fried Mars bars aside.
Got it. Well, okay, so here are the football players, American football, played Madden when they couldn't play. Saying. FIFA.
So, FIFA.
Yeah. So like, this was something that I tried to facilitate on campus with the student union was even before COVID hit, we were already on Discord. We already had our Discord set up, partnered with like Discord Hype Squad. So we got all the sort of benefits for our server so that we got full creativity for what we could as a society. But when everybody came back, we were already accustomed, had everything set up, our roles, everything there, our gaming channels. Whereas a lot of societies were like, what do we do? We're using a Facebook Messenger group. This isn't really efficient. Really, okay, well, jump on Discord. Like, we'll choose how to do it. And we ended up getting the LGBT society to come on to do a couple of collaborations across. And it was more so we already had an infrastructure. So in terms of the esports and how it's impacted, it's been more highlighted, really, because we were one of the few industries that could sort of continue as normal. and it sort of filled that void that was replaced with mainstream media. So you even seen it within the UK with the BBC starting to stream Rocket League, and it was being streamed onto the BBC iPlayer. So you could go on and watch it on your BBC iPlayer, which I thought was crazy at the time because I never expected it to be like that at this stage. But you've seen a lot of gaps. Even ESPN picked up esports, I think, just in general across the globe. But you're now seeing BBC getting more involved with the amateur leagues within the UK and streaming those onto BBC iPlayer as well. So it is getting quite a lot of media attention. And I think that's probably the biggest point, is that people had their PlayStations and everything already, or they had their gaming setups and they were already training and competing in these competitions. It's just people had nothing else to do during that period. So it was just something that get really highlighted, and the benefits already show, especially during a pandemic situation.
I mean, I'm in Sweden, right? And, you know, the Swedish thing and the Scandinavian thing was they were very quick to put in high-speed internet and offer tax rebates on PCs for homes. Yeah. They were, that's where the whole Ninjas in Pajamas and the early Dominance and the DreamHacks and, you know, it all came from this infrastructure, whereas Ireland is, I think, more like Scotland, a bit of a PlayStation nation. Pro Evo Football 15 years ago, moving into FIFA, and we talked to a CEO from Africa, and there's the mobile scene there. And the question is, like, what sort of scene are we seeing in Scotland? Is it like a big FIFA heavy Smash Brothers? Is it CSGO? Is it what's really going on there in terms of games?
I think that's what everybody's starting to figure out. I think for a long time, it's had a bit of everything. It's had your FIFA players that went on to win UK leagues, European competitions. You've even had a couple of, or even back the sort of early 2010s, you had Snoopy going playing for CLG and League of Legends. Even now we've got the likes of Doki, who's playing as a professional with Navi for Rainbow Six, and even Scrubkiller, who's one of the top Rocket League players. They're all from Scotland and they're all developing through these pathways. The issue is nobody really was connected. There was no networking facilitation really. So you had, even within the Smash Brothers communities, or the fighting game communities as a whole, there was no communication really between them. They stuck to their own thing and that's what they did. There was no like huge events, or even to the scale they could be being put together. The only sort of event that we had was Resonate Total Gaming, which was held at the SEC, albeit one of the largest venues for exhibitions like that, but it could have been a lot bigger. And especially when we have the likes of Esports Scotland being introduced, that's now facilitating sort of amateur leagues as an independent events company, you do start to see people getting interested and getting involved within the games that they run. But I think it's a bit of everything, to be honest. I think, as Brian said, it is very PlayStation orientated. I think the UK's always came out as more casual playing. I think that's sort of the casual console playing. But
yeah, on the couch with a few beers with your friends playing Pro Evo FIFA. That's is the, where the Swedes are, you know, far more. Scandinavians don't, you know, get as much proximity. The Irish and the English and Scottish are much more get together for a number of factors, so that we play on the couch, whereas the Scandinavians play away from each other. So, you know, that's
really interesting, that's just, actually, though. That's really interesting. Like the play styles, right? Like the differences. Because, like, here in the US, it's like we've always had both for like as long as I could. Like, we've always been a big console country, but also, like, again, couch co-op and playing with friends. But I mean, PC gaming in the 90s has been huge here too since then. So that's actually really interesting. I never thought about like places having, except for China, right, which like banned consoles until just a handful of years ago. But I hadn't really thought about it in Europe, like being different in places. But that would obviously shape sort of the path you take to esports culture today and here and now. So that's really interesting. I never thought about like the infrastructure, like you were describing, Brian, in like Sweden. It makes so much sense though.
Yeah, but no, one of my favorite esports moments is my cousin Rory playing my friend David. And we used to play Pro Evolution Football. I have a few beers, obviously. And you had best of three random, right? So Rory got Albania, Greece, and Scotland or someone else crap. And the other guy got Brazil and Italy and Argentina. And I just remember Rory won 1-0 backs to the walls and the rest of us were cheering him on as Greece overturned Brazil. And that's my favorite esport moment, which is born in my culture. So Rory, there you go. I've acknowledged that victory over Kino. Kino, I'll send you this video. Prove you're now documented that loss by you. That's it, right, Mark?
In terms of the infrastructure of esports itself, it's always been universities. Universities has been sort of the main drive through, and that's I think mainly across the UK as well, as it's become the most stable place because you're there for 4 years and you've got those 4 years to really develop and get more involved with the games and the competitions. But in terms of sort of infrastructure investment, the Scottish government has just announced after something called the Logan Review about £7 million to invest into tech. Which a million of that's been put aside for sort of events and online, or not so much online, but more so physical events, conferences, training to try and facilitate change, essentially, for startups and in particular within the digital space. So it's an opportunity for a lot of people to now get involved and to work with other areas of industry. I think it's sort of looking at the sort of careers aspect where you don't just go to be a pro. You can, but there's other pathways there. It's the same with esports. You've got to work with the infrastructure that's based there. You get to work with all the companies around you to help make that happen. And I think it's fantastic to start to see that 5G is now getting set up in a lot of places across Scotland, especially around a lot of these main hubs. I'm actually quite fortunate that I've got 5G towers just a couple of meters that way. So I've got really good 5G connection, but that I'm one of the very few people here that can. If I went back home, I live with my parents, they're in the middle of nowhere, where for a long time we struggled to even get 4G, never mind 5. So
wait, is this why you moved? Because we delayed this podcast because you had to move with your girlfriend to the new place. Was it just like, I need 5G? The
whole thing? Well, I was trying to get fiber, but I didn't manage to get it. It's still good internet. If I was living with other people that really use the internet, I would have been struggling, but I've got a solid 60 download to myself. So
I had 5 in Vietnam. That was awful. So look, we're nearly running out of time here. So Recently I was speaking at a conference that you asked me to speak at, and that was, well, you tell us about it there because you organized it.
So essentially we, in partnership with the College Development Network, which is one of the national bodies in Scotland for the college sector, do a lot of great work around training and facilitating some development areas, especially with esports. We partnered together on an education conference within esports. So it was looking into what is actually there within schools, colleges, and then universities. What's the sort of dynamics, the scene that are set there, but also looking into industry and connecting industry with education, what opportunities are there, even within the game sector itself, seeing how esports' growth over the past couple of years and its projections moving forward. How is that going to impact the game development scene? Is it going to impact careers, developments and pathways in the future? But also, can you get a job in esports within Scotland? And I think moving across a lot of the diversity, inclusion, and then we even got Brian on to talk about the research opportunities and the value of research within esports and how it's such a crucial thing in terms of sort of the validation of certain opinions moving forward within esports. Is we're very young still, although esports has been around for what I believe 30 years essentially, and it's only really taken off in the past 10 right, to 15. Right. So it's now looking at the more people that are getting involved, the more research that gets published. But it really covered everything. It covered from your sort of mainstream education to careers to the benefits of esports, and then also to the research aspects. and we got a lot of people from across Scotland, lecturers from the school, teachers from the schools, lecturers from the colleges and universities to really talk about their experiences and what they were looking to do forward.
And Steph, I'd just like to point out, I was just selected because my name is Macaulay. My great granddad was Scottish, so I seem trustworthy to the Scottish people with my surname, Macaulay. It's got a Scottish
it.
Name.
Yeah, I didn't think it was based on your actual credentials or anything. Don't worry.
I don't even remember what I talked about. They were like, who's this guy?
Who let him in?
They put Aaron Koshy in there with me because he's a proper doctor.
Because someone needs to watch you.
You're here to keep me behaving. They put Aaron with me, so I'll just keep me in line. I mean, Mark, I think it's wonderful that finally Scotland's winning something in football through FIFA, even if they don't do it in real world. I mean, you know, was Aberdeen 1983, Celtic 1966, and I think Celtic fans won Best Fans in Europe a few years ago in the UEFA Cup campaign. So it's great to see that Scotland is finally winning something in football.
We qualified for the Euros, so it's something.
Yeah,
over Steph's head, but we qualify for a far.
Sounds good.
I'm living in Sweden and I'm Irish, so I can't say anything. So I'll take back that joke, but no. Before we ask you future research recommendations, I mean, there is one research project that you're kind of talking about with Brian Houston and stuff. And can you just tell us about this project that you're looking to start with? Or can you tell us?
I don't know. I've just recently been brought in on it. But it's really looking into the mental health around esports and the barriers into esports and whether there's enough awareness of other industries out there that are promoting a career within it. There's a lot of, we know from a lot of different surveys across the UK and a lot of research that a large majority of the population do play video games, but are they actually aware that there are career opportunities within esports? Mm-hmm. So I think especially within just the sort of future research area, it's looking into how you can create and develop infrastructure within. I think it's really highlighting the benefits, looking into how teams can perform better. Are they actually competing at the top right now? I think that's down to the teams themselves. How can they improve? Is it a key part of development moving forwards? I mean, we've started dipping into the educational benefits of it with the BTEC, but is it something that should become more embedded where video games itself isn't even really within the curriculum? I think in terms of the UK, mm-hmm. Scotland's the only country that recognises video games as a media for learning. A media platform for learning within its curriculum. So it's starting to look at how it can be part of people's careers and their lives, which it already is, but providing the support and functionality around it.
Very cool. Well, Mark, thank you so much for being with us today. This was really great. I learned a lot about what's happening. What's that?
Deep fried bars, as you have to make some.
Most importantly, I learned about that. Yes. Everything else.
You are welcome. You have one and you tell me. Oh, Steph, you muted yourself there. She got too excited about deep fried Mars bars.
Yeah, I don't know what I did.
Going, I can't wait to do this. How much oil do you fry it in?
I don't know what happened there. I got too excited. But Mark, thank you so much for coming on the show. This is really great. Really excited to see what things you continue to do in the UK esports scene. So thank you so much.
No, thanks for having me on. And thanks for reaching out to me and wanting to know more about it. And hopefully there's a bit of spectrum of what's happening.
Oh, I'm totally jealous. You're doing a fantastic job, mate. Just like I'm gonna say, this is Mark. Help develop stuff in Sweden. Thank you. So thanks a million. So if you want to know more details below the podcast, the video or whatever. And okay, thank you very much.